right, everyone. Welcome back to the Sound Mind podcast for season 3. I'm your host, Alex Hoffman, and I'm so thrilled to be back today to kick off the season with some amazing guests. Today, I'm here with David Goss and Leo Photos, who are two musical theater creators based in New York City. And I'm going to get our podcast started the way we always do, which is the question, how's your head and how's your heart? And David, let's start with you.
My head is good. And that is because I have a lot of work to do. And when I have a lot of work to do, that helps my head make order of things that need order made. It makes the heart feel a little bit less good, but the heart, all in all, is still feeling good. It's a high anxiety day, but such is life.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. I think that I'm the opposite. My heart's feeling great. My head is all over the place right now. Anytime we're like a week or two out from an event, that's all I'm thinking about. Even though this event is not one that, it's not anything new. We've been working on this for a while. It's still an event. It's still getting up in front of people. So my head is all over the place, but my heart is feeling fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. And we'll talk about what that event is, in a little bit. As for me, my head is also a little all over the place. Our season starts next week at New World, and it's my last season. So lots of mixed emotions, mixed feelings, getting back into a routine. Heart is good. I just went to Harry Potter World this past weekend, and it was pretty dope. And my birthday's on Saturday, so going to be a very fun weekend. Looking forward to that. So yeah, I'm good over here too.
Happy birthday in a few days.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. 29, you know, feeling old, but that's okay. So guys, tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves and your backgrounds.
Leo, kick it off.
Ourselves and our backgrounds. Well, we met about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago. And in doing community theater stuff as little babies. And we decided that we should be friends, and we decided that we needed something to keep us in touch. And instead of like meeting every weekend to ride bikes or something, we decided to write a musical. I don't know why that was. We still don't really know why. I wish I could go back to those text messages and figure it out, but we don't have those phones anymore. Or the chargers probably. We decided to write a musical, and we were both kind of struggling with our mental health at the time. We were not talking about it with each other. And so this was sort of like our outlet for communication. And we decided to write this musical called True that really detailed what we were going through. And it was sort of our way to hide behind something while still sharing our story. And now we just continue sharing our story through the show, but we don't hide behind it.
Yeah. And unlike maybe most high school going into college aged people, like, we decided not to study it. And we decided that we wanted to basically keep every element of this new project that we were working on a secret for about as long as possible. And so that means we couldn't study it. That would give away the farm. We decided to do things that were not musical theater related in school while also in class writing this show, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was a senior in high school, like the first year that we were writing. So I have a lot of like physics worksheets that have True on the back.
And I have one specific notebook that says biology and then open parentheses and True close parentheses.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
So our background is, we figured it out and are still figuring it out and have no education in this.
As we all are, just figuring it out. Tell me where you both are from, where you went to school, things like that.
Oh yeah. Both of us. Yeah. That little community theater that we met at is in Western Springs, Illinois. That's the town that I'm from. It's about 20 miles outside of Chicago. And if you go maybe 3 or 4 miles further outside of Chicago, you'll run into the town that Leo's from.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because like the two of us grew up about, I don't know, 15 minutes away from each other and didn't meet for the first, 18 years as you know, people do. But because we went to the same community theater, but also at different times of the year, David only did summer classes and I did school year classes. we had the same friend group, but they would just swap us out for our entire lives, basically. So I had this group of, let's say, 15 or 20 friends. And then over the summer, I would not do classes and David would sub in and he would have that same exact group of 15 or 20 friends. So in many ways we had the same theatrical upbringing, but without each other.
Yeah. So
really weird. I don't know how that worked out.
So were you other David or was I other Leo?
Oh, always.
This is a very good question.
Thank you. Me, always other Leo.
But I was older than you. So I was there first. Yeah. So who knows?
Well,
oh yeah. What was the school part of the question? That's always a fun part of the question. I went to the University of Chicago, and as one does when they go to the University of Chicago, I studied economics like everyone else at that school. I think over a quarter of my graduating class were econ majors. So like, I am just one of many, but you know, apparently, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Right. So it's where fun goes to die. So no fun was allowed. I had to find my fun.
That is what they said. Musicals. Yeah. As a Northwestern alum, we did say that about you Chicago people, if I may just dig at you for a second.
It's on all the t-shirts. Yeah.
Yeah. And you all probably had a little bit more fun, but I can't.
Much more. Like a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
Although maybe we shouldn't talk about Northwestern D1 sports right now.
Yeah, probably not. That's okay.
Speaking of mental health challenges.
Yeah, right.
I feel for all those kids.
Oh, I have no idea anything about that.
Because you're a theater person.
Yep.
What's your background? What's your school, Leah?
Yeah. Oh, what's my school? I didn't really go to school. I did not know this. Oh, you didn't know this?
No.
Oh, no. I've been figuring this all out since preschool. I was accepted to college right after high school. I was accepted to Berklee College of Music. I went for 5 weeks and had some crazy mental health scares and was like, yeah, maybe this isn't the right step right now. Maybe it was too big of a step or just the wrong step, or a leap instead of a step. So, I dropped out and then I, worked at Starbucks for about 6 months, which was fun. Talk about like learning how to deal with anxiety, like working the,
at a coffee
like
shop,
the 5
any service
to
industry job.
Yeah. The 5 a.m. to 11 shift at like a Starbucks next to a train station. Come on. So that was fun. And then, I learned a lot from that, believe it or not. And then I went to DePaul in Chicago and studied film for 3 months and then decided to study undecided business for 3 months and then decided to change that to education for 3 months. And then I was like, well, you know what? I should probably be studying theater. I want to do theater. That's what I want to do. And so I went to the theater school at DePaul and was about to walk into like an interview. And in my backpack, I had the entire show of True and then another script that we were working on and then a notebook full of ideas for another project that we were working on. And I was like, well, I'm already doing this. So why am I going to study it if I'm already figuring it out? I feel like I was figuring it out. Okay. So I dropped out again. So I'm a double dropout.
That's amazing. So you mentioned when you started school that there were a lot of mental health issues that you were facing. Can you talk a little bit more about those? And what was going on there?
I at the time did not know what was going on there because I feel like now I have a brother who's 10 years younger than me. And I feel like now that he's a senior in high school, the conversation around like the whole mental health thing is like so normal. If people are having a rough day and they just don't go to school, it's fine. Like it's so just whatever.
You mean for younger generations? It's
for younger kiddos. Yeah. It seems like they, whether they're handling it the right way or not is not my decision, but at least they're like talking about it and it's a part of the conversation. Then I didn't even have the language to describe how I was feeling. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I just felt bad, you know? And I didn't know what that was. So I would just tell everybody that I was exhausted because I was, but obviously it was more than just, I was tired.
Right.
And, so, I mean, David and I both grew up fairly sheltered compared to everywhere else in the world. And I think that the second that I stepped out of that shoebox that I lived in to Berklee College of Music, where everyone is like, I'm like by far the most normal person that was there. And I just looked around and I'm like, what is this world? This is chaos. And it all just exploded. They had accepted, I was just telling the story the other day. Yeah. They had accepted too many freshmen that year. By like, I think like a couple of hundred. I don't know why.
And it's not a very big school to begin with. So
no, it's super teeny tiny. Talk about a shoebox.
I mean, I work in higher ed, so I could tell you why that happened, but that's not this the point of this podcast.
Oh, okay. And so they accepted too many freshmen that year and, or something like that. And so there weren't enough dorms. So they just like bought a bunch of brownstones and just shoved us all in. So I was in a room that was meant for one person. And there were three of us shoved in there. They just like stacked bunk beds and said, figure it out. We had no toilet. We had to like go somewhere else to use the toilet, like far away. I'm not like a dorm, but we had like a sink and one window and three bunk beds, and there was nowhere to walk. You had to like walk through my bed to get to somebody else's bed. It was a nightmare. So it really speaks to like the space that you are in needs to be able to be suitable, and the folks that you're around need to be able to take care of you. And you have to have the language to describe what you're feeling. And I had none of those things. So it all just blew up.
It was like culture shock combined with homesickness, combined with undiagnosed mental health challenges that led to this like explosion of, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So then I came home and figured it out, and then thought I figured it out, and then didn't figure it out.
And then, what was your parents' reaction to that?
Oh, they were cool with it. They totally got it.
Good.
I think that, again, they also didn't have the language or the know-how to actually like help. Mm-hmm. No one did, because it was only 10 years ago. This doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but
so much has changed in that time. And even in the last few years of being in the pandemic, it's changed so much too.
Yes. So much has changed. We have a lyric in the show. So much has changed. And then so much is changing around me. It's a lyric that's in the show. It's one of those things where even if you don't know how to help, you can at least just be there to listen and support. And they did that. So that was good.
That's great. So I do want to talk a little bit about True. So the reason that the three of us met for our listeners is because we were connected through your musical, True. And I'll just read the summary for the listeners. True is a musical that shines a light into the life of Truman, a man living with mental illness personified as a toxic relationship with a manipulative her. New to the neighborhood, Isla is an artist seeking to rekindle her lost passion and overcome her anxieties. Their paths meet through a shared loss, and Truman and Isla are left to confront their personal struggles together. With the help of those around them, Truman and Isla find the strength to lean on each other, embarking on a journey toward recovery with the help of their family and community. From what I've seen, I've told you both this before, but for the listeners, I love this musical so much from what I've seen of it. And the first clip I saw like brought me to tears because I was just so amazed at how you were able to show this relationship in such a unique and I think important way. I think sometimes with just playing instrumental music, there's a lot of symbolism in that, but I think sometimes musical theater captures so beautifully what, you know, instrumental music can't in some ways. So I think you both just did such a beautiful job. Obviously it was a long time in the making and it really comes from the heart. So you talked a little bit about when it started, but I want to hear more about the story of True and how it came to be.
Yeah, it's actually, it started off very simple as this kind of way for me and Leo to explore some of the things that we were going through without having to be truly open and vulnerable to each other. And so it was kind of like, you know, these characters were vessels that we could pour ourselves into, pour our experiences and thoughts into as a way to open up to each other and talk to each other. But we didn't have to like go into the scary conversations of like, I am feeling this. No, it was always like Truman is feeling this. Isla is feeling this. And we shortly after that realized that like, oh, through these conversations, we have made our own mental health more understandable and accessible to us. Maybe we can take this one step further and maybe make our experiences a little bit more understandable, accessible to those people in our lives, like our parents, our siblings, our friends.
Well, the big light bulb moment, our logo is a light bulb. And we always say that we have light bulb moments throughout this whole project. The first like massive light bulb moment was that everything that we were going through at the time and still is completely invisible. you know, most of the people who are struggling with their mental health, everything that they're going through is invisible. And if somehow we could just make it visible, then that would automatically just make it accessible. And that's all it started from. We were like, well, if we could take the invisible and make it visible, if we could show what the relationship, I mean, they always say the relationship between you and your mental health, if we can show the relationship between someone and their mental illness as a relationship, take the invisible and make it visible, then boom, all of a sudden everybody can see what we're going through.
And thinking about it that way allowed us to actually come to terms with a lot of the things. Portraying it as a toxic relationship is something that, you know, we had seen and to some degrees had experience with. And it was the closest kind of visible, tangible, real world tie-in that we could see, because much like a toxic relationship, it's not bad all the time. In fact, sometimes like everything is wonderful and you're happy and things even appear perfect, but then, you know, things show up, there are triggers, there are things, you know, that rear their head, that suddenly you feel like you're no longer in control, that there's this other part of you that is, you know, debilitating and antagonizing and all of these other things. And you're like, but everything was fine just a second ago. And at the same time, you don't know how best to respond to it. You don't know how to deal with it. And you just kind of like are forced to, you know, live with it. And you feel like there is no way out. And that was a cool kind of breakthrough moment for us to be able to explore our relationship with our mental health and mental illness through that lens.
Yeah. I mean, the language that we are now taught to use surrounding mental health and mental illness, I mean, in many ways has a double meaning, like self-talk. If self-talk is literally just dialogue, you know, and if that relationship is actually a relationship, all of a sudden, like taking that double meaning of all of these things that we use in healthy mental health language, and taking those double meanings and turning them into this show was really an interesting one.
Yeah. The other fun thing that we got to explore was the concept of like depression as seductive, like depression.
That's so interesting.
Not,
yeah.
Cause it's not like, you know, it's like your bed is calling to you saying like, just stay with me all day. And you don't feel like ever being able to leave your bed. You like, you feel low energy, unmotivated, like pointless, lost, and all these other things. But it's like, what if you spin that on its head and instead there is something in your bed calling to you to stay there that is tough to resist? And that was a really interesting thing to explore, that it's like, oh, like depression as seduction, that's weird, but makes sense, but also doesn't make sense. But at the same time, enough people along the years like connected with that, that it was like, okay, we're maybe onto something here. If it works for us, it can work for others.
I'm going to go one more, and then I'm going to throw it back to you. The word commitment and how the word commit now in all things mental health language is kind of a no-no word. But then all of a sudden,
can you explain that to listeners who might not know what that means?
Sure. So way back when, folks would say that when someone has taken their life, that it was that someone has committed suicide. And now we've sort of spun that and made it into, I think it's died by suicide is the one that folks would prefer at this point.
Yeah. It is no longer, I think that like weirdly originates that like suicide was a crime. And so you've committed the crime of suicide. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you commit arson, like, I don't know. So to us, we were like, okay, well then what if in a relationship commitment, like, are there negative connotations with the word commitment in this relationship that we're seeing between our protagonist and his mental illness? And we kind of explore that in a song where we do use that word and kind of see where it leads him. It's goofy. It's been very interesting. Okay. We're throwing it back to you now.
No, it's amazing. I'm really, not a lot of people know the proper language to talk about somebody who dies by suicide. So that's why I wanted you to explain it, because there are still people that say, commit suicide because they just don't know. And it's a very important language shift that is difficult to correct somebody in the moment because it's such a serious topic. And I hate making people back up in the middle of a conversation and be like, oh, by the way, you can't actually say that. And so I think it's just important for people to see and hear that sometimes. And I want to go back to something, one of the first things you said, which was making something invisible and making it visible. And our mutual friend Carl Evans always talks about having a mental health condition as a psychological injury. And if we treated mental health conditions like psychological injuries, we would treat them very differently, just like a physical injury. So I think it's great that you guys are talking about making things more visible, more tangible for everybody. And also just, I love this idea of depression as seductive. And I think personally with my own experience with depression and anxiety, I sometimes just have to tell myself that, okay, no, this is just my brain saying that. This is not me. This is not how I actually feel. This is just my brain being really mean to me. And I literally have to separate my brain from what's actually happening, which seems kind of insane when I say it out loud, but I really have to just remind myself that sometimes my brain is just not being my friend. And it's trying to get me back into bed, or it's trying to get me to just like eat a bunch of junk food when that's really not what I want and it's not what I need.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We've separated that brain from that self and threw it on stage.
But the thing, and you talking about it that way is also so valuable to you, to be able to separate the thoughts from, you know, reality. And you know, something that I had been taught for years and years and years, but never really gave credence to, was the concept of noticing. And now that is kind of like my fundamental go-to strategy when I'm feeling, you know, pangs of anxiety or panic, is just like notice it and then name it. And then like, there's always been like a concept in old, you know, medieval or fantasy literature that like by naming something, you remove its power. In like, that's like an elvish thing, or not Elvis Presley, but elvish, like the ears.
Yes.
And so like by naming something, you are able to remove some of that power. And I found that like anxiety, panic attacks, all that is like, oh, panic attack, cool. And then great. Like I can just accept that I've named you. Haha.
I call my anxiety Elvis. So
yeah, I mean, perfect. I mean, that's how a lot of people feel about getting a diagnosis. I, for years personally, I didn't want to go see a psychiatrist because I was seeing a therapist, but not a psychiatrist, because I knew if I went in, they were going to diagnose me and they were going to prescribe me medication, as is many psychiatrist jobs. And I didn't feel like that was going to resonate with me. And then I finally was at a point where therapy just wasn't working by itself anymore. I felt like I needed a little extra help. I was interested in medication. And for some reason, getting that diagnosis or that label made it feel real. And like, it wasn't just in my head, or I wasn't just a stressed out person. Like I had this thing that I could name that I felt like, okay, I can treat this. I can do something about this. This is not like a character flaw. This is like something that's actually going on with me.
Yeah. Taking back some agency there for sure. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's been my word of the year is agency, and applying it to like the mental health space, because my partner is a therapist, and her specialty is with older adults, and agency is a big buzzword in the older adult community, making sure that, you know, as you age, you still feel like you have agency in the things that you do, even as your mobility declines or your cognitive function declines, to make sure that you are still, you know, able to live a high quality life. And, you know, asking for help is a part of agency too in that regard. And as she has been applying it to the older adult space, I'm like, there are a lot of these lessons that can apply to young adults and teenagers, is the idea that like asking for help is you taking control of your life rather than giving up control of your life in a way. And I'm like, that's actually largely applicable to everyone, not just the aging population.
Putting the age in agency.
Love that. I think a lot of adults are, the stigma around mental health for a lot of people, but especially people of older generations, is that I don't need a therapist because nothing's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And I try to remind people that you see a physical trainer, even if nothing's wrong with you. You might go work out with them at the gym every single week. It doesn't mean anything's wrong. It just means you want to get stronger. And it's the same thing for your brain.
Yeah. Foam rolling for your anxiety.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to use that. Thanks.
That's great.
I think we found a new slogan. We're already kind of moving away from True, but Leo, you talked about this a little bit already, but David, maybe you could talk a little bit about your experience, your personal connections to mental health as it relates to being an artist.
Oh, that's actually a really wonderful question. We actually have a lot of that written into the show in the character Isla, our other kind of protagonist outside of the titular character Truman. A lot of my background is like that of the, I call myself a recovering gifted kid. I'm working my way through.
Same.
Like, yeah, that label, you know, and, you know, having eyes on me as young as first grade, when recently I learned that my very first panic attack actually happened in first grade. Fun fact. That's a fun story. It was bagpipe related, but I won't get into that just yet.
I like really want to know this story when we have time, but
no, it's so that I learned, I mean, I have sensory induced panic attacks sometimes. And there was a bagpipe assembly at my school and I was sitting front row and there were like 40 bagpipe players. And
that's a horrible idea, even for people who don't have sensory induced panic attacks.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, and so I was just like sobbing in the front row. I had to leave the gymnasium and like, once I left, I was like perfectly okay, but I was just like, what the heck was that? And then it wasn't until like 20 years later that I was like, that was a panic attack, David, because I made that connection when I was walking down Fullerton in Chicago and about a billion motorcycles drove by, like literally a billion. And I had a panic attack and I was like, this is bagpipes. This is bagpipes.
Dude, bagpipes on tile floors. You can't do that. That's
so anyway,
in a gym, it's so mean anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, as a gifted kid, I was always like, perfection is the only thing that's acceptable. And I was often doing things in my academic career, in my education, like not for myself, but because everyone expected me to be doing those things.
Like economics. Like,
yeah. I mean, that one actually was for me, weirdly enough. I went into college wanting to be a math major and a physics major. And then I was like, nope. That's much too hard. Let me settle on something that is still hard, but a little bit less hard. So in the creative space, when Leo and I met, I was actually very, very afraid of guessing wrong, quote unquote, we'll say, because I'm used to going to the back of the book. And if I got it wrong, I could be like, okay, cool. Let's like find the right answer, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have to like go up in front of the class and be wrong. I would never. But when you're creating something, there is no right way to do it. There are, in fact, only wrong ways to do it that you keep finding the better wrong way and the better wrong way until you find a way that works for you. And I was afraid to, you know, like that episode of SpongeBob where he spends 8 hours writing the word the. That was me. That was me.
Yeah.
And so we put that into the character of Isla, who is, you know, a struggling artist and, you know, used to love art, was a very creative kid, grew up, went to art school and kind of had some of that inspiration stolen from her as she realized, like, I need to make a living. I need to like try to find a way to do this as an artist. And she gets to the point where she's even questioning whether she should even be able to call herself an artist because she hasn't really created anything in a while.
Oof.
And that gets to the point where she's like, I can't even start a painting anymore because it has to be perfect. It has to be perfect. And her journey of overcoming that is a lot of what I had to experience in the early years writing True.
Yeah. David and I are like so opposite. I love that you said you would go into the back of the book and like check the answers and stuff. I didn't even bring the book home. I would have just been like, I didn't bring that book home. Sorry. And I just wouldn't do it.
I love the back of the book. I got high off of that.
Yeah. Wow. We're so different. But no, I mean, David with the whole word, the, I love that SpongeBob reference. David would write the most beautiful word, the. Meanwhile, I've written a whole series of books and they all suck. And so the two of us somehow make a brain and it just like, it works so well. David always says that, what is the boat?
You're the speedboat and I'm the rudder.
Yeah. 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 Cause where like, I'm just like, boom, go in. And David's just directing me. That's all.
That's very heartwarming.
It's fun. Cause like a rudder without a boat will just sink to the bottom of the ocean, and a boat without a rudder will go and go and go
somewhere.
Who knows where.
Yeah.
It's the perfect synergy.
It really works out well.
Yeah, that one has, awesome. I've come up with a lot of analogies over the years, but that one I think is the one that's best.
Yeah, it is. But creatively, yeah, all the creative struggles are written into that character, Isla.
That's amazing.
It's so funny because I thought that when we started, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so the Isla and David's so the Truman. And I think we've totally flipped.
Yeah, little did we know.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, going back to that overcoming perfection piece with Isla, I just saw this like Instagram reel or something about how musicians are expected to be 100% perfect. And they use the example of just playing 100% percent of the right notes. And if you get like a 90% in a class, that's still an A. Mm-hmm. But if you only play 90% of the right notes, they showed an example of this with like a Michael Jackson song. It sounds super wacky and bad. And comparing that to the level of perfection that is expected of artists in general, I can definitely relate to that. I'll send it to you guys. It's really funny. And I think it's a really great model to show to, you know, anybody, not just artists, to understand the level of pressure that is expected of artists. And I think it's so great that you guys are able to take your very real mental health struggles as artists, and like we've talked about before, just personify them and make them very real. Cause you're describing Isla's experience as an artist. And I'm just like, oh, yep. Check, check, check. I don't even want to start a piece because it's not going to be good enough yet. Check. Like it's very real. So it's important for people to see.
Yeah. The other important thing that we kind of wrote into her is the discovery that, you know, actually it can help to, if you can't do it for yourself, to do it for someone else. And you know, some people are solely intrinsically motivated. I am not necessarily one of those people. I like external factors to be able to help me. And so
former gifted kid.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like, there are plenty of days where I'm like, I don't feel like working today, but that doesn't like, I'm going to work today for Leo. I'm going to show up for Leo today. And
that's very sweet.
That was a fun thing to write into the story, where we have Isla's grandmother, Gail, who is kind of the community's matriarch. And she is the one that kind of is like, hey, Isla, if you feel like you can't do this for yourself, I remember when you were 7 and had all the joy and creativity in the world, like you would paint things for me all the time because you wanted to, you know, can you just do this one thing for me, to kind of just like show yourself that you can do something. And that creates a really special moment in the show where Isla realizes like, oh, I can still do this. Even if I can't do this for me, maybe I have to find, you know, people to do my art for. And that's largely also what happened with True, is we got to the point where, you know, we felt like this show was bigger than just ourselves. And I mentioned earlier that we kept it like a secret for basically 2 years, just doing it for ourselves. And then we're like, you know what? We have come a long way with this. We have come a long way ourselves in our own mental health journey. It's time maybe that we start doing and writing this show for others too.
Mm-hmm. Are you making edits to the show as you go, or is it like set in stone?
We're always making edits. Actually, the summary that you just read earlier in this episode, I literally just edited. We're editing everything always. It is very much alive. Cool. And it will be alive until some director yells at us at some point to freeze it.
But it's like, this show is our time capsule. Like, you know, we look back and there are some things in the show that we've written 9 years ago. There are other things in the show that we've written a few months ago. And it's really cool to see like, oh, there are some songs that were clearly written by the boys that were still struggling. And then there are other songs that were clearly written by the men who have largely figured out their process and everything in between. And I think as we keep continuing on our journey, that's only going to help the additional perspectives of the show grow. Mm-hmm.
You guys have been going to colleges and talking about the musical and talking about the importance of mental health. And what else have you been talking about at some of these schools, and what have you been sharing with the kids?
Yeah, we started doing that a few years ago because my two welcome weeks.
I'll give you credit for both of them.
Thank you. My two welcome weeks were both rough, and nobody came and stood in front of us and talked about what we were feeling. It was always someone who was very out of touch, and had no idea what we were feeling. And I don't know why those people were the people that they decided to throw in front of us as freshmen. And so we decided that if even at a few schools, a few times a year, we can be the ones who are in front of folks who are not that much younger than us. I mean, I'm only 27 and they're 18, you know what I mean? Or whatever, to kind of be like, you know, we're only a few steps ahead of you all. And this is kind of what we were feeling. And we wrote it into this thing. That's really all it is for like an hour, is us being like, we felt this, so we did this. We felt this, so we did this. And then maybe you all can do something with that. And maybe not. It's so low key. And it's a lot of fun kind of talking through the way that we got through stuff through true at their age, basically.
Yeah. For a long time, Leo and I's like personal mission has been to be the adults that we wished we had when we were in certain age here. And so a lot of that talk is us just like talking about some of our fears and some of our mistakes and some of the things that we had to overcome, both in the context of our higher education college experience, but also in the creative space, writing true, and kind of like melding those together in this like fun little bite-sized, you know, piece of musical presentation.
Yeah, we share some music too, which is fun.
That's awesome. I also just want to commend you both because there aren't a lot of young men in this space talking about mental health. A lot of the conversations are hosted by or brought forth by women, and not to make it a super gendered conversation, but it is really important for young men to have role models like the both of you, to feel like it's okay to be vulnerable. I don't know if you guys have heard of the Man Enough podcast, but I'm making a plug on this podcast because it's all about what it means to be man enough. And it talks about vulnerability, but especially in the mental health space. I'll send it to you guys because it's a lot of what you're already doing. But I think it's just you're already promoting some great conversations and being great role models for young men. So thank you for that. I want to talk about where we can watch True soon. You have a pretty big event coming up. So tell us about that.
Soon. Too soon. I see that's where's how's my brain, how's my heart? That's where my brain is. It is coming up on Sunday, September 10th. We are doing a concert of 20 songs from True, or as David likes to say, 19 and a half, because one of them is just the bows. Thank you for being exact.
Hey, that counts as a pit musician. That definitely counts.
Yeah, it's 45 seconds of music. So yeah. 20 songs from the show. And so we're doing a concert as a part of the Hope for Us Network. We talked about Carl like just a second ago. Carl's organization, the Hope for Us Network's Conclave. So we are sort of like their nightcap.
Yeah. Yeah. That event starts at 4:30 with like appetizers and stuff. And then we are the dinner entertainment. Dinner starts at 6:15. Our concert starts at 6:30. And then afterwards, I think there's even dessert after our concert. So, you know,
that's why I'm going.
Exactly. So yeah, at the Aris Brewery and Cider House in Irving Park, old Irving Park.
Yep.
Really cool venue, really cool, you know, group of people that run that venue. They're very active in the mental health space. They've been very excited to partner with Carl and the Hope for Us Network. And that's really cool too.
So we have six singers who are all like, I think there might be too good. Led by Broadway's Blue Allen. Blue is he's in MJ right now. And then we have a band of six plus me. So seven.
Exciting. Chicago people, go check this out because I can't be there and I'm really sad. Please go for me because it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it's been really cool. Some of the performers have been along this journey with us for almost 7 years now too, which is
that's
wild.
So cool. That's awesome. So
when folks, you know, get to be a part of this project, they become part of the True family and it kind of like sinks into their bones a little bit too. So it's fun. It's a fun story. And we can tell that, you know, it matters a lot to people just because some of our performers want to keep coming back and keep coming back.
Yeah. Little do they know that when they audition for us, they're stuck with us.
I love that you're creating your own little True family. And I think it's also a testament to how the two of you are writing and running things and doing such a good job taking care of your people. So I want to applaud you for that as well. It's so exciting. Go see True, everybody. I also want to know what other projects are you two working on at the moment? So True is obviously happening in Chicago, September 10th. Maybe that's where your brain is at and you're not thinking past that, but what else do you have going on at the moment?
I wish that was all that was on my mind. No, we've got right after that in October, we have another concert in New York for another show that we're working on that we've had for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This one's a really cool story. We met the King of Mardi Gras back in 2017 when he was 91 years old.
And by met, we mean like we spent almost like every day talking to him on the phone and flying down, and befriended him for the last 2 years of his life.
From
91 to 93.
We really hit it off with him. And when he was 93 years old, he decided that we should be the ones to tell his life story as a musical. So he signed his life rights, his exclusive life rights over to us. And then sadly, he died a few months later. But we are now the keepers of his legacy. And he had the most incredible life. It's kind of like a weird combination of Forrest Gump and like the Lion King in a way.
Meets Mardi Gras. So we're trying to bring Mardi Gras to Broadway. That's like our big adventure right now.
That is so cool. I'm so excited to hear more about that. Oh my gosh.
That's why we don't sleep.
Yeah. So we have our first open to the public concert of the music from that show called San, S-A-N, because his name is San Nicolas. And that's, October 26th at Broadway's 54 Below.
Oh, yeah.
The Broadway's Cabaret Theater.
Yes.
And
that's night so cool.
Club or dinner club or whatever. Dinner theater. Yeah. Broadway's
New York
theater.
People, you know what to do. Check it out. Thank you guys so much. Where else can we find you?
We're all over the place. We have a website. That's fun. Gauzeandphotos.com. We're also on TikTok. We play musical theater games on TikTok. And I guess people like it.
It's how we progress.
They're very fun.
There's something. And then we're on Instagram at Gauze and Photos. We're on Facebook at Gauze and Photos. We're
at True Musical, at San Musical.
Oh, yeah. Those are on there too.
And then, we're in New York and we're in Chicago. So if you run into us, say hi.
Yeah. Totally.
Everything will be linked in the show notes, including info about the upcoming shows. So everybody, please check it out. Follow them, like, subscribe. You know what to do. Guys, thank you so much. It's always wonderful to talk to you. And I love your work. And I'm just so excited to see how everything unfolds for the both of you.
Thank you. Yeah, we're big fans of you too. So we were happy that Carl introduced us.
Yeah, me too. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.